This is URN.
FIFA has decided that it's going to ban poppies as part of its prohibition on political, religious and commercial messages. However, the football clubs of England and Scotland have said they are going to defy this ruling and allow their players to wear the black armband with the poppy on it, saying they will accept any punishment or try and block any sanction. The English FA chief exec, Martin Glenn, has said that the poppy was not a political symbol. It is simply a mark of remembrance for those who died during the war. There has also been a petition asking FIFA to reverse their position, which has attracted over a million signatories. However, the Secretary General of FIFA has lashed back by saying that they apply their laws uniformly across all of the members, and therefore he is questioning why Britain should be the only country that should be allowed to wear this emblem when it is not the only country that has suffered a war. And therefore, my question is the poppy a political symbol or an emblem of tradition?
I think it's not a political symbol because war, unfortunately, is political. You're absolutely correct. But the men and women, by the way, who die for our country, and not just for the UK, but for other countries around the world, have put down their life for freedom, for the privilege we have today, have been fought for. And I think the poppy on the shoulder is a basic, it only goes some way of respecting those soldiers who have died for our country. It's not a political decision, it is respect. And it's sort of hypocritical from FIFA because they are hosting a World Cup, upcoming World Cup in Russia. You know, how political can you get with that? You know, anti-gay, anti-everything, Putinocracy, you know, I think they need to get off their high horses, really.
But would you not argue that at this moment in time, when obviously FIFA's, you know, reputation has been so tarnished, is the moment where they have to be like, okay, we're going to apply all the rules, you know, from now onwards, like exactly as they're stated. So you could argue that potentially they're trying to be as consistent as they can, even if obviously in this very moment it seems like, you know, a huge amount of hypocrisy.
However, there have been instances, for example, when Ireland played and they played a friendly against Switzerland and they had the mark of the centenary of the Easter Rising, which surely is a religious symbol. However, this was not picked up by FIFA, and therefore the question is, are they being selective?
I think that the main difference between the two must have been just the mediatization of it, because I feel like the poppy is such a, you know, such a huge symbol over the whole of the United Kingdom that they must have decided internally, I don't know through what means, that this was something that they should, you know, decide upon. And I think maybe that the Northern Ireland case was an oversight on their behalf just because they didn't do proper research into it. Because I agree that to the same extent should have definitely also been, you know, banned if the poppy is to be banned. But then the case is, do they decide let's ban everything, or do we make an exception here, in which case they'll have to make exceptions for a lot of other countries, because the UK isn't the only place where people remember their, like, you know, their dead.
I think it's interesting that both the Scottish and English FAs have both said sort of, you know, along the lines of, we don't care, our players will be wearing black bands with poppies, you can sanction us if you want, like, rain down hell on us if you want, like, that's okay. I think maybe possibly for us, I have an Irish friend who I was arguing with, one of my housemates I was telling Abby this morning, and she was saying that she agrees with FIFA and she thinks the poppy is very political. She thinks that obviously, like, the wars are very political, and she says her biggest argument was, you got to look at, yes, we won the war, but what about other countries that lost the war? They might see that as possibly offensive, possibly, like, rub it in our face, which I disagree with. I think, for me, the poppy is about remembering all dead and every dead person, as well as everyone that's sacrificed themselves up to and including today. And I think it's very insensitive of FIFA to say, to target the poppy as a political ideology, no, political symbol, even, not ideology.
I just want to add to that. I think it's a massive sign of ungratefulness. I mean, the Secretary General, I can't remember his name, Infantino, I can't remember, is that his name?
Yeah.
He's Italian, I believe, and the poppy represents soldiers who liberated much of Europe. I don't get why you'd be ungrateful towards those soldiers. And also, you're absolutely right, Jack. you know, they're Auschwitz survivors who are now selling these poppies on the street. There was a lovely, heartwarming YouTube advert clip showing an Auschwitz survivor still with his tattoo and everything selling poppies. So it's not just for soldiers, it's remembering war dead. And by the way, he was a German prisoner of war, so, you know, what does that tell you? This is a universal symbol, I think, of peace now.
Yeah, I'd rather take the politics away from the poppy. I don't want the poppy to represent World War One, World War Two, or any other conflict from then. I would want the poppy to represent respecting the dead and respecting the sacrifice of people that possibly didn't get a choice of whether or not they went to war. You know, for me, World War One was obviously very, very political, and the whole start of it was due to politics and countries being pulled in, and a lot of the people that died, they didn't have much of a problem with Germany or Austria-Hungary or any other country that they were, like, any of the other soldiers they were fighting against. It was just because they were told to by other people.
Do you think that maybe then the problem is that the poppy needs to become in the media and on a political spectrum, it needs to be shown to represent more countries? Do you think the problem is that a lot of people do just associate it with Britain?
Well, you know, from my perspective, having, you know, lived a few years in Belgium, I see poppies around a lot, like, because obviously a lot of the war heroes, you know, coming from, like, England and, you know, other countries, like, you know, are buried, like, in Belgium. And it's a very, you know, prominent symbol, like, everywhere around, like, Ypres, for example, and I think even in, like, France, around some. So I feel like there is an association with, you know, larger parts of Europe, but I do think that, obviously, specifically, I'm thinking if you were, like, somebody whose parents were, like, for example, a German war veteran, who, in essence, you were just following, in essence, what you were told. Like, you wouldn't exactly decide, oh, I'm going to go against, you know, this regime who's just murdering people every day. You know, you kind of were put in a position where you didn't have a choice. So I can see why relatives could find it, you know, maybe the symbol needs to potentially be changed. I agree personally that the people need to be remembered. I think it's good to remember to avoid, you know, future conflicts. However, I can also see why it can cause pain to certain people.
I'd be happy to include multiple symbols or, like, multiple other flowers or whatever other countries would like, just to keep it as a symbol of peace. I mean, for me, it's the poppies of Flanders Fields. The reason we have a poppy is because on the Western Front, a lot of our battlefields is the poppy that grows in the spring and summer, and that's why we have a poppy. It's not supposed to be for any other reason than that.
I really don't think we actually need to change the poppy. It represents soldiers from Canada, from America, from India, who fought in the trenches and also fought in the Second World War. This poppy is a universal symbol. You know, quite frankly, I'm offended by a white poppy, you know, because I believe, you know, if you're trying to put any sort of, you know, message that's sort of, you know, taking away from the honour, taking away from the sacrifice these men and women gave, I think that's offensive. And I think FIFA has been, I think, wittingly offensive in this case. For me, you know, they've been, everything they do now, they need to be treading on the eggshells as an association. And I think this is one large stomp they probably needed to avoid.
The Brexit case.
Well, yes, this is a story about the EU referendum has been dragged through the courts, at our expense, of course, and the High Court has ruled that the Brexit vote made by millions of voters will have to go through a vote in the House of Commons. Now, the government is expected to take this decision to appeal, but the main point is that once again, the forces that be are trying to prevent Brexit. Critics think that this is a ploy to subvert a clear public vote and slow down any progress. Honestly, that is just a critical point of view, not mine. The markets are still fluctuating and this has done nothing to help that situation. However, the dilemma lies here. If the Commons gets a vote on this, do they have to follow the British people? Not following the public vote would be political suicide for nearly every mainstream party apart from UKIP, and could potentially force a general election. So I would like to ask the panel today, is it the right decision? Have the judges overstepped the mark? And do you think we should stop slowing down Brexit and just get on with it?
Well, you know, I'll be, you know, very open with you. I'm definitely on the Remain side, but however, I feel that I'm also, you know, 100% a believer in democracy. And at the end of the day, if people voted to leave, you know, it was a clear message, and you can't go against what a majority of people want, because that's just, it's in essence unconstitutional. What's the point of having a democracy if then it can be kind of changed behind, even though obviously, you know, it's not, you know, the outcome that I would have liked initially.
Yeah, I agree. I'm also pro-Remain. However, I do feel like it is slowing down an inevitable process. I think it's, I don't think the decision is really going to change. MPs will tend to vote for what their constituency wants in order to keep their own votes. And therefore, I think by consistently trying to put through blocks or slow down the process, we're just wasting a bit of time, really.
I would argue that the point you made about the constitution, like the individual constituencies voting for what they think their part, you know, why they were voted in, and they, obviously they want to keep their votes. But where I'm from the south of England, and almost the entire area is blue, up until, you know, past London, minus London. And I think even my I know that my member of parliament will vote leave, thanks Chris Chope, but I find that a lot of these people, they could probably still, if they wanted to vote remain, they could still vote remain and probably still get voted back in, because the only people that are ever voted in, and for the last 20, 30, 40 years, the only people that have been voted in where I live, have grown up, have been the Tories.
Well, of course, that's very interesting. There's the political point of view, and then there's the legal point of view. The political point of view, Labour came out actually soon after this decision from the court, saying, no, all our Labour MPs, well, if they follow Jeremy Corbyn, I don't know if they still do. I doubt they do, really. But they would follow the Brexit vote. They're going to honour the democratic vote, which is fantastic to hear. But the judiciary seem to be overstepping the mark here. In this country, we have a clear division between politics and the law. In America, not, which is, I think, unhelpful. So we need to keep it like that. And what the judiciary in this country has done is just wandered into a minefield, unwittingly knowing, you know, the storm they've just created. You know, these are unelected old men who have just decided that, oh, no, the government is going to be told how to pass a democratic vote. I don't think that's particularly democratic. And just to add, one of the judges is a member of a group for European legal integration. So how subjective is
any
that?
Any bias there? Who knows?
Absolute bias.
Well, you know, I'm going to ask you guys a question. Like, to a certain extent, though, because following Brexit, there are huge amounts of people petitioning for, you know, like, obviously, you know, without any, like, actual outcome, you know, re-votes. And do you not think that sometimes, you know, this might be where, like, why, you know, the people judged, okay, we need to act to show that there's some form of reaction, even if, as you said, you know, long-term, this might not actually affect the outcome. You know, as Abby said, you know, the vote has been, like, made already. People have already chosen. But do you not think that they just want to show that they have understood that there's an appeal from a significant portion of the population?
Yeah, I think that's important, because I think it's such a significant issue that to sort of just stick with the first decision and just go full ahead with that is a bit of a risky thing to do. However, I think that if it happened that, in fact, we did not end up leaving, I think the repercussions would be so great that I'm just not sure it's worth it.
Could you ask questions, though, when I think about the tour bus that the Leave campaign had and pasted on the side was £350 million a week that goes to Europe, you know, will be put back into our NHS. And then the same day, within 24 hours, Farage was saying, we never said that. You know, I don't know where you got this idea from.
Well, I can answer that directly as a staunch Brexiteer who was campaigning in Watford and in Nottingham. Farage wasn't actually part of the Vote Leave campaign, so you can't blame Farage for that. It wasn't his decision. And the fact is, the side of the bus, you know, people have to read it, actually. It says, could go. So the money could go to the NHS. It could go to other places as well. So people have to
Scheming.
Read too. But what I would say is, this is, you know, this is a lifetime, a once in a lifetime decision. 72% of the population came out and voted.
Very high.
52-48, people might go, oh, there's a little bit of percentage points in it. Well, no, just 72% of people came out and voted, the most in 20 years, I believe, for any sort of election in this country. I think that's something you need to look at. I mean, once again, it's the, you know, sort of the establishment versus the people. It happened in Ireland when they had a referendum on the European Constitution, and the European Union just brought in the Lisbon Treaty through the back door and ignored everyone. Well, I hope that's not going to happen in this case, because I think this country would have a serious, you know, reaction to someone subverting democracy, because it democratic kind of values in this country run very deep, and I think that will be our saving grace.
But there is also the worry that this has become, the focus has just become on democracy and not the actual issue at hand.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, especially, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it develops in the future, because that's a key thing, because the actual issue at hand right now is that we're not, you know, leaving the EU currently, like, quick enough to, like, settle market jitters. And, you know, for a lot of people, they're not sure whether, you know, in particular foreign investors, this isn't actually going to help, you know, long-term, like, you know, either Britain or the EU. And so that's why it kind of needs to be resolved relatively soon.
I was just going to make the point of there are some pros to Britain possibly leaving. I was reading about a couple of weeks ago, well, more than a couple of weeks ago, is it CANZAC, CANZA UK, which I'd be quite interested in, which is sort of like a Canada, UK, Australia, New Zealand sort of EU-esque thing with free movement of people within the R4, or those four countries. And I think, I'm assuming there'll be some sort of trade deals and stuff. So I don't think it's all bad if Britain leaves at all, but I think you're right. You can't have a referendum and then have a high court rule over it. Why wasn't there a high court ruling before we even had questions about a referendum? That, I think, in my opinion, we should have had someone going, actually, yes, the British people can be relied on to make a decision, or no, the British people can't be relied to make a decision, an informed decision, and we should leave it up to Parliament.
Well, I mean, of course, we've got a 2-year period to actually get out of the mess, which is the European Union. Yeah, I'm smiling.
Wasn't it? I was under the impression that we had 2 years to negotiate the best deal we could.
Well, you can't actually negotiate a trade agreement while you're negotiating Article 50. It's, you know, the sort of complexities that the European Union has made up themselves has now come back to bite them, which is, for me, hilarious. But for me, you know, this whole kind of stalling of Brexit, it's not going to matter really. The European Union's not going to, it hasn't got a high shelf life. Italy's on the verge of crumbling. Greece is getting more unhappy. Spain is about to elect probably a leftist government bordering on communist, definitely anarchist who wants to leave the EU. Marine Le Pen could become president. I don't know. The European Union could die in 5 years' time. Good riddance.
But do you not think that a lot of the Brexit campaign and a lot of, you know, effectively the votes that were garnered were, to a certain extent, you know, through, you know, vague slogans like 350 million could be given to the NHS, we could have, you know, fewer migrants, but a lot of the people who voted, as you said, you know, maybe didn't necessarily have all the, you know, facts in hand, as I'm pretty sure most people who voted, I can't say that, you know, as, you know, somebody who even, like, you know, I followed, you know, the whole, like, Brexit scenario, but I can't say that myself I would have had the, like, facts in hand to make an actual reasoned decision, be like, mathematically and, you know, logically, this is better or this is worse. So there's so much subjectivity that you could argue that, you know, the way it was effectively passed on from, like, you know, something the government should decide to something that, you know, us as, like, you know, citizens of Britain, like, decide, I feel like maybe that was actually, you know, the government kind of making a poor choice. Would you not agree with that to a certain extent? Because it's very easy to say, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Brexit happened and, you know, this is, like, so much better and, you know, EU is on the verge of collapse. But equally, you know, before the EU existed, you know, we'd gone through two world wars and, you know, there were just so many kind of conflicts arising through the fact that there wasn't a sort of, you know, body which encompassed all the nations and took into account every nation's interest.
What? Just, I mean,
I agree with you. I can definitely see at the time that was very necessary, but I come from a farming background, and I know that the sanctions, or the regulations even, with possible sanctions that the EU has put on farmers and like fishermen, actually have little to no benefit for our farmers and are quite often were very, very irritating and infuriating. I mean, my aunt and uncle certainly were at losses sometimes for some of the decisions that the EU made that certainly benefited other countries in the EU, but were no way helpful for us as a nation. I think that the EU has served. I think the EU had a great purpose, but I don't think the EU is as good as it. I don't think it serves that purpose that you are putting down now. I think it's become too power hungry, and certain individuals have become too power hungry and too controlling.
This is URN.